I'm Dr. Tammy Fleming, who will be talking about evaluating fidelity, the role of program and organizational structure in replication outcomes. So Dr. Tammy Fleming is the Plain Talk Program Director at Public Health Management Corporation in Philadelphia. With more than 20 years of experience in public health, she has an extensive background in program development, implementation, and replication. Before joining PHMC, Dr. Fleming served as director of the Plain Talk National Replication Center, where she implemented a broad replication plan and expanded to more than 30 sites. Her research interests include adolescent reproductive health and replication and fidelity of evidence-based programs.
Good morning. I'm not going to talk as fast. I'm from the South, so bear with me, but I'll get my 15 minutes. One thing, I'm a little nervous, or either I'm cold, so I think it's nerves. So if I look your way, if you could just affirm and smile, it will make me feel better. So I want to sort of give you a description of the lens for which I approached this research study. I did Plain Talk. I've been working with Plain Talk for about 15 years, and at the time that we were doing it, we really took a really good look at the core components of the project. We provided technical assistance, training, so we sort of controlled that aspect of the replication of this model. One of the things we still found was that there were still wide variations in the program. I think the interest in this topic is because we know that we're in a hostile funding environment for public health programs. And one of the logical things for us to do is to think about programs that have evidence and bringing them to scale. But one of the things I found is if you look at the research is not that strong on bringing these programs to scale. It's mixed at best. And one of the things we need to figure out is what's causing that. And if you look at the literature, you'll find that most of the literature have focused on core component on fidelity. But fidelity is very complex. It's multifaceted. And there's one school of thought that says you can never really truly get fidelity of these models. But we know that in translational research, we can control for some of those things, and we could have some outcomes if we replicate with a strong level of fidelity. Disclosure, sorry. So after doing Plain Talk at the Replication Center for a while, we had about 40 replication sites over a five-year period. And we mandated the core components, as I said, but we had this wide variations in program outputs. So the problem, I thought, was the Plain Talk structure was recommended, but it was not mandated like the core components were. So I wonder if this is what's causing the variations that we're seeing. And I think this is something that has been seen through a couple of evidence-based programs where they're implementing the core components. However, they're not seeing the same sort of outcomes across the board. So we have to look at some of those other things. In the literature, they have stressed the importance of structural fidelity, but we have no empirical evidence around structural fidelity and really looking at outcomes of evidence-based programs. So this was one of the things that I thought, oh, this would be a great research topic for my dissertation, so this is where I jumped in. So my research questions were, what structural elements of the Plain Talk model were more prone to adaptation? That was the first thing I wanted to figure out. So if I looked at the structure overall and I looked at six variables, which ones were more prone to adaptations or changes when people replicated the model? And then I wanted to know, what is the relationship between the most frequently altered structural elements and the replication outcomes? And how did those elements really impact the replication outcome? So what was causing this? And finally, I wanted to look at the Pareto principle, and some of you guys may have heard of this. It's a mathematical analysis. And they said there may be a lot of things that's going on, but there are only three or a few items that really makes an impact or have the largest impact, so that we would know where to focus our attention and resources in terms of future replication efforts. So here's the research design I decided to go with. I used a sequential explanatory design where the focus in the first phase of the data was on quantitative analysis. And then I wanted to also back that up and find out the real story from the people on the ground and figure out whether they agree with what that quantitative data said. And so that at the end, I mixed those two pieces to give an interpretation of what I found. In phase one, I did a structured record review. This was secondary data. It was already available. We had files on all the replication sites. So there were 65, there was a census of about 65 replication sites. My inclusion criteria were that the sites had to begin the replication within that 5-year period, but they also had to end before the beginning of my study, just because of some ethical issues, because I worked at I could sort of urge people to participate, and they may have felt like they were obligated because I was the director. So they had to have finished their formal, they would have, but that's another. They had to finish their formal or be outside of a formal relationship with the replication center so they can truly decide whether they wanted to participate or not. And they had to have put all three core components into action. That was another inclusion criteria. So there were 40 sites that met the inclusion criteria, but there were only 28 sites where I had complete enough files to actually conduct a really strong structured records review. So in phase one, the structured record review, I began collecting the data. The initial reviews used the inclusion criteria. I collected electronic files. We had site journals, progress reports, information on the implementation agency. And then I organized all the files in the same order because I was going to have someone else help me in the review process, and I didn't want anyone to actually have to look through or figure anything out. So everything was organized in the same format in one centralized location so that the reviewers or the researchers assistants can have everything at hand. We also had laptops available so that if anything was not printed, they could go onto the electronic files and look at it. And then we provided codes. One of the criteria for the research assistants, I wanted folks who were familiar with the Plain Talk model, so they were past staff, but I didn't want staff who were involved at that moment because they may have had too much information or relationships. So I wanted folks who were involved and knew enough about the program so that when they began to look at the variables and try to decide whether fidelity was kept or not, they could do that with some sort of, with a high level of confidence. So the research assistants, we went through a half-day training where we actually, I wanted to make sure everyone understood the protocol. We were all doing the exact same thing. We were all using the same tools and made sure everyone understand different definitions and terms. And I wanted to conduct an inter-rater reliability sort of process. So I had a pilot file, and each of the research assistants had to grade on fidelity independently, and I wanted to look at those to make sure we had inter-rater reliability, and that was my measurement of whether the training worked or not. So it was very high, and when we had any anomalies, I would say, around the data, I think there were one or two issues. It was interpretation because we did have Spanish-speaking sites and some of the information was in different languages. So in terms of the structured record review, the only thing I will point out here is that I was able to determine that when there was missing data, it was missing at random. So I decided to do a pairwise deletion versus listwise deletion because, as you can see, my sample was already small. So I wanted to keep as much of the data intact and use it as much as possible. And I started my descriptive analysis of the 28 sites. You can see we were all over. I think there were about 10 states represented here, 32% in the West, 25% in the Midwest, 29% in the South, 14% other. We had a site in Puerto Rico, a site in Jamaica. So that's the way they were distributed. Language, about 50-50. And when I say Spanish-speaking, it was more bilingual sites. We had sites in North Carolina. We had sites in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So overall, it was about 50-50 in terms of whether the site was considered a bilingual site or predominantly English site. We also had one Hmong site. Once that was completed, I went into phase two, which was a case study. I wanted to do a collective case study. And what I did was I separated the sites into what was I would call successful replication sites and unsuccessful. Here's one of my limitations. It was a very subjective categorization. If they completed the three-year implementation project, then I categorize them as successful. If they did not complete, if they started and for some reason they did not complete, we categorize it as unsuccessful. It was very subjective. I think in the future we would really want to look at those outcome, outputs and outcomes and be a little bit more objective about success and not success. And in the collective case study, I needed to also do interviews, so I had to get people to volunteer. So each of the 28 sites received an invitation to participate, and I had 9 responses. So 3 of those were from unsuccessful, and 6 were from successful. People who are successful are more likely to want to tell you about why they were successful. Started the same process for the case study. It just said we took an in-depth look. We used those case files. We looked at these variables that we were trying to identify, and we went through those files in detail to get the information. And then I did a collective case study, one on one of the successful sites and the unsuccessful sites, and I tried to figure out what were the emerging themes here. And so the same information, it was written up as a case study, 2 individual case studies, and try to see if I can find any emergent themes related to the success or not unsuccess of the site. So how did these elements impact replication? When I looked at the case study, we were able to determine that the sites really believed a lot of the structure was really important. Whether it was a successful site or not, they really emphasized that the structure, if the site had it, they gave a lot of credit to the program structure. They took the recommended structure. They implemented it as we recommended. The site that didn't was able to say, if we would have done this, I think we would have been more successful. So I was able to find those sort of themes there. I then began to analyze the data quantitatively to see if I can figure out what was going on. And you see we had a high-level adaptation with about 4 of these variables where 70%, 50% or more of the sites had adapted something around the structure. So that was for staff structure, the agency's mission, community relationship, and the program budget. When I looked at the data, however, the quantitative data, I could not find a relationship between success and these structures. I think one of the things, another limitation of this study was that this was secondary data. Now that I've done it, I would probably collect some different measures in the future, and I would collect it annually because this was a 3-year project. We collected a lot of information the first year, and so maybe that information changed over time, and we did not see it. But in the case studies, they actually thought that each of these variables were very important. So my data was sort of mixed, so it was very inconclusive in terms of what the quantitative data said and then what the qualitative analysis said. When I tried to implement the Pareto principle, it fit perfectly. We looked at staff structure, the mission and value, community relationship, and program budget, but the first 3 accounted for about 75% of the changes if you look at a cumulative process. And I plot the actual diagram because that's what you want to look at with Pareto. And you can see they are accounting for the vital few. These are the things that in the future we would want to focus our attention on in terms of replication with structure. And some of the other things, it doesn't mean they're not important, but I believe these will have the highest level of impact. Social change implications. I think one of the things after reading the literature, we really have to go beyond the core components of a program model. When we see success in bringing programs to scale, if you read the literature, you find it in mental health programs and educational programs. But in both cases, the structure is usually intact. And it is part of the mandate for implementing those programs. In social programs and community-based programs, we are not doing those kind of things when we think about bringing models to scale. And the idea here is to get the results at scale. It's not about that program and replicating and get 100 programs. It really is about getting those results at the bigger level. And we need to have development of objective tools and measures to assess structural fidelity. So I did some things with tools that we had originally developed, but I think there could be some universal tools or objective tools that we could use. And special thanks to my dissertation chairs in the audience, Dr. Perkins. Thank you for being here, and I'd love to answer any questions you have.